It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up later in the program, the federal government is stepping up efforts against sexual assault on college campuses. We'll find out why the Education Department is investigating over 50 schools for possible mishandling of reports of rape, with one Wisconsin campus on that list.
First, it's getting to be the time of year in Wisconsin where the temperature warms up and the state kind of returns to life, meaning it's a great time to hop in the car and see what Wisconsin's got to offer.
A road trip can be one of the most memorable vacation experiences a family can have, and you don't have to go too far. There are a lot of great trips to take without crossing the state line.
Joining us to talk about some great Wisconsin road trips and to share some advice to maximize family fun and value is Julie Henning. She's the founder of WisconsinParent.com, and she's the Midwest editor for RoadTripsForFamilies.com. Julie, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
So is Wisconsin an especially good state for road tripping, or is it just me? It seems like there's so much
to
offer here.
It's an amazing place for a road trip. It's a huge state, and we've got the Great Lakes, and we have big cities, we have farms. You know, there's a lot of different geographical regions, and there's a lot you can do within, you know, a 3-4 hour drive.
And can you talk about the value of taking a family road trip?
Well, family road trips, if you have more than one child, they are cheaper than flying. And there's something about the time that you spend in a confined space with your children and your spouse that brings you together and tears you apart, and you have to figure out how to do it all.
Well, you come at this, you know, from the angle of a parent, since you know the challenges involved here, lots of, you know, energy cooped up inside a little car or minivan or what have you. So what do you kind of need to do to brace yourself and plan and get prepared for things to go smoothly?
You can't. We've been doing this for years, and we have one kid that sometimes has motion sickness and another one that's the when are we there yet kid. And I would recommend planning that you have some snacks. And if you have little children and you're traveling during nap time, you can certainly do some things to avoid that. But just get and go. Get in.
One of the mistakes I've made is taking that too literally and just getting in and going. My wife is really good at keeping us honest and making that list a couple days in advance so we start packing. How early do you usually get ready for that trip?
Well, I travel so much. It's kind of shameful. I'll pack the night before, but I've done it so much that I know what to pack, and I have a list that I made that I just print out and I check through. Do we have flip-flops? Do we have hats? Do we have water bottles? So, you know, a couple days ahead of time is a good gauge.
Well, if you're packing the night before, then I don't feel so bad.
You should try it. It's really exciting. Anyone who hasn't lived in the moment.
Believe me.
Yes.
Well, I want to dig into some of your ideas. Starting in northern Wisconsin, I understand that you're going on a waterfall tour.
Yeah, northern Wisconsin is somewhere we haven't spent a lot of time. And so I looked at the map and I sort of drew a line north of Green Bay, and that's where we'll be spending most of our summer. And Florence County, which is near the Upper Peninsula, the border, Iron Mountain, they have an abundance of pristine lakes and rivers, and they have, I counted, at least 15 waterfalls. And so we'll be going hiking and playing in the water in August.
Mm. I'm a big waterfall fan. I've done UP waterfall tours a lot. Sometimes they're well posted and there's a lot of good directions that I get there. Sometimes they're off the beaten path. Do you know, do we have pretty good indications of how to find our Wisconsin waterfalls?
Well, Florence County has exploreflorencecounty.com, and they've created some different guides on how you can maximize your waterfall trip. So they tell you the roads to take and the sequence of hikes that you need to go on in order to make the most of your path.
Mm, it sounds fantastic. You know, you don't think about all the waterfalls there are in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. but there are, especially when you head up in the northern region. And another thing that you suggest if you're heading up north is something you call the Fruit Loop Tour. What's that?
That is near Bayfield. It's north of Bayfield. So if you've ever been to Madeline Island and looked at the map, you'll notice that the peninsula extends a little bit further into Lake Superior. And so the tourism people there put together a drive, and it takes you through the different orchards and vineyards in the, you know, that's a place in Wisconsin where there's a lot of sandy soil and you can get some excellent fruit.
Yeah.
Well, let's take us a little south of there now to Wausau and Stevens Point area. What kind of things can we do there?
Well, Wausau, did you know, is the ginseng capital of the world?
I knew Marathon County was a big ginseng area.
Yes. Yeah. So in addition to getting your ginseng on, they have a lot of activities around the water. And also, this is something that we're going to do is tour a fox farm. So we want to hear what does the fox say. I don't know. It's probably they're probably sick of hearing it. And also it's the I want to make sure I have this right. It's the place where the 45th parallel and the 90th meridian intersect. And there's a plaque there and you can go visit. There's only two places in the world where you can do that on land. The other is in China.
Oh, wow. Well, that's really cool. I bet the kids would get a kick out of knowing that.
Well, they will appreciate it someday, I'm sure.
Well, usually you can't know exactly where you are on the map, but there you're like, we're where that line touches that line.
Right. We're at the crossing point.
Exactly. Well, Door County is always a hit, and there's a lot of stuff to do there. What do you recommend for a road trip in that area?
Door County. Who does not love Door County, really?
Nobody.
I didn't realize this, but I recently learned there are 53 different beaches, so places you can go swimming. Door County this year has a lot of different outdoor activities. They have disc golf, Segway tours. There's an off-road Segway, which I'd never heard of before. And they have different places where you can go on kayak tours, stand-up paddle boats. Really, there's a lot to do when the weather's warm in Door County.
Mm. And on our way back from Door County, there's the rest of the Lake Michigan shoreline on the way down south. What we could maybe probably work that into that Door County trip.
You could. You could hit Green Bay. Have you ever been to the amusement park there, the Bay Beach?
No. What
no,
is
I hear
that?
So much about it.
Super cheap. Every ride is a quarter. And the food is inexpensive, and it's a place where you can go and your entire family can have the amusement park experience for about $10 if you do it right.
And what is the park called again?
It's Bay Beach.
Bay Beach in Green Bay. Gotcha. Okay, well, that's a new one. And another one you think about is the Driftless region. This is one of my favorite areas of the state. And you've got a little driving tour that you recommend in that area, too.
Yeah, the Driftless region is it's the south east corner of the state, southwest, sorry about that. And if you went from Madison to Mount Horeb down through Spring Green, you hit places like New Glarus, and you ended up in Dickeyville, and you could see the Dickeyville Grotto at the very end.
What it's just such a beautiful part of the state, the Driftless Zone. I love it every time I'm driving out there, out to La Crosse or wherever.
And if you do, you have to have your windows down. It's just to take in the whole experience.
Okay.
Radio up, windows down.
Wait, what is the Dickeyville Grotto?
It's at a Catholic church in the town of Dickeyville, and I forget the artist's name, but it's a minister, a priest, created a collection of his different seashells and pieces of glass.
Wow.
I don't even know how to describe it. You have to look it up.
All right. Something else to add to the list.
We're talking with Julie Henning about some great ideas for Wisconsin road trips you can take this summer. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking about Wisconsin road trips with summer right around the corner. It's a great time to hit the road and start getting excited about getting in the car and seeing Wisconsin. And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What's your recommendation for a great Wisconsin road trip? Share some of your memories, your highlight reel. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Julie Henning is with us. She's the founder of WisconsinParent.com and the Midwest editor for RoadTripsForFamilies.com. We'll go right to your calls now. We have Bob in Mauston on the line. Hi, Bob.
Well, hello. How are you
all? All right. I bet you have a recommendation for us.
Well, I do. I do certainly have a recommendation. Now, but first, I'd like to say that I have a house in Mauston, Wisconsin, north of Madison, but I actually live in my car because I've got a 2008 vehicle with 189,000 miles on it. I sell for a living. I'm on the road all the time. And the funny thing is, for the last 20 years, every car I've ever owned, I can't find one for whatever reason with a radio station that goes anywhere between like 88 and like 91.9 at the highest. It always sits right in there. And So all I get to listen to are the public radio stations and the university stations, and I love them. And I am a sustaining member, by the way.
Thank you so much.
Southwestern Wisconsin was the last thing that I heard as far as a place for a tour. And what they failed to mention is a brewery tour.
Ah.
New Glarus Brewery, Spotted Cow, one of the best, most sought-after beers in all 50 states, but you can only get it in Wisconsin. You go down to Monroe, and there's Minha's Brewery. You go over to Potosi, and there's the Potosi Brewery with Potosi, good old Potosi beer, of which every cent of profit goes to charity from Potosi beer, if anyone cares to look into their story. And also in Potosi is the National Hall of Fame Brewery Hall of Fame.
All right, Bob, thank you so much for your support for Wisconsin Public Radio and the great recommendation of a brewery tour in that part of the state. Any other great brewing tours that you might recommend, Julie?
You know, well, I have children.
Well, right. Yeah, that does put a crimp in that.
But I do have a friend, Kevin Revelinsky, and he wrote the Wisconsin Best Beer Guide.
He's been with Joy Cardine a couple times.
Yeah, you can take his book, and the secret, the best part about his book is you can use the... it's a passport and a lot of different breweries, and you take your book in, you show it to them, and they give you a free pint or some other perk that you wouldn't get just by stopping in.
All right. A couple good tips there. Thank you so much, Bob, for the suggestion. And let's cruise on to Allison in Cuba City. Hi, Allison.
Hello.
Hi. What do you think?
Hey, I was just talking, you guys were talking about Dickeyville and the Grotto, and back in my high school days, I was a tour guide there.
Ah.
So I was just giving your listeners, if they're not familiar with the Grotto, that it was, you know, designed and constructed by a priest, and he was given a statue of the Blessed Virgin Mary, so he wanted to honor her, so he kind of imported some stone, rock, people gave him different trinkets, and he kind of built it into a couple different shrines. There's an awesome gift store that they have. And then I think Memorial Day, the ladies from the church, they have a garage sale that goes all summer.
Okay, fascinating stuff. Oh, thank you for fleshing that out for us. So I take it, Allison, that this is something that, you know, you can just visit as a tourist.
You can just visit as a tourist. There's just great parks. You know, a little park area there as well. There's a lot of people that stop and see, and you can take 10 minutes, take some pictures. You can take an hour or so and spend.
All right, very cool. Thank you so much for sharing, Allison, and thank you, Julie, for telling us about the Dickeyville Grotto. Appreciate that, too.
You're welcome.
Go back to our callers. We've got Macy now in Blanchardville on the line. Macy, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I sure can. What's your recommendation?
Well, there's a great little place in Hollandale, tiny little town, but we always went there as kids. It's called Grandview. It was the home of Nick Engelbert, and he was a great artist, and his whole house is sculptured, and there's sculptures all around, and it's just a great place to visit in the summer. And
that's great, and that's over in Hollandale, you said. I think we lost Macy there, but that is one I have never heard of. Is it on your radar?
I have not heard of it either, but I'm going to look it up.
All right, excellent. Thank you for that suggestion, too. And we move on to Sandy in Williams Bay. Hey, Sandy.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What's your recommendation?
I would like to go west out of Madison towards Arena, Wisconsin, and get cheese curds. There, you can watch them make the cheese right there. They've got this big gray plastic mouse sitting outside, and they're just so good.
I know this mouse, yeah. So you can watch them making cheese curds there, huh?
Yes, I load up every time I go. And then if you proceed on, you can go towards Mesa Mania and Spring Green, where the Shakespeare Festival is, and Taliesin, and then you can wind down to some beautiful roads towards Blue Mound State Park, like Junction J or X. And there's little cheese factories tucked in those little valleys.
Great. Well, that's a really good thought. Kind of a cheese tour Sandy's going for there. Have you thought about that, Julie?
I haven't intentionally done it, but I have seen that same mouse. And there are places where you can buy cheese and go to see the curds in action across the state.
We have time for one more recommendation. We've got Trevor in Milwaukee on the line. Hey, Trevor.
Oh, yes. Hello. Long-time listener, long-time supporter. Really love your program.
Thanks.
Thank you very much for having me. You guys had mentioned earlier Bay Beach and Green Bay. Green Bay has a lot to offer, especially the Packers, but even more than that, Bay Beach is a great place. And for all you Elvis fans out there, a little known secret, the Zippin' Pippin is a roller coaster that was purchased by Bay Beach and was moved from Memphis piece by piece and built at Bay Beach. It's a great place to bring your kids. The whole family can have a lot of fun there. And right across the street is the Wildlife Sanctuary, which has trails and animals that you can go up to. I mean, it's just a really great town.
Trevor, thanks so much. And maybe bring some peanut butter and banana sandwiches before you, or maybe after you go on that Elvis's favorite amusement ride. Any tip you want to leave us with, Julie, before we're done on our on that next big road trip we take?
Well, I would encourage you to get out, go somewhere that you haven't been, try and turn left when you want to turn right. You never know when you're going to find a mouse or a roller coaster from the king.
Excellent. Well, so many great ideas. Julie, thank you so much. Julie Henning is the founder of WisconsinParent.com. She's the Midwest editor of RoadTripsForFamilies.com. And if you take any of these trips we've been talking about, let us know about it. We'd love to see your pictures. You can put them up on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. The Obama administration this week put pressure on colleges and universities to protect victims of campus sexual assault, and today released a list of 55 campuses and other investigations for possible mishandling of reports of sexual assault, including UW-Whitewater.
The White House Task Force to Protect Students from Sexual Assault released its first ever report and announced a series of actions to help address the problem of campus rape.
And it also released this PSA.
If she doesn't consent, or if she can't consent, it's rape, it's assault.
It's a crime. It's wrong.
If I saw it happening, I was taught you have to do something about it.
If I saw it happening, I speak up.
If I saw it happening, I'd never blame her. I'd help her.
Because I don't want to be a part of the problem. I want to be a part of the solution.
That was a clip from a public service announcement the White House released this week. It features the president, Joe Biden, and a host of male celebrities denouncing campus rape.
Our guest today, Laura Dunn, worked closely with the White House Task Force to Protect Students from Sexual Assault. She was also directly involved in the passage of the Campus Sexual Violence Elimination Act. A former UW student who survived a campus sexual assault herself, she founded Serve Justice, a nonprofit that works to decrease the prevalence of sexual violence by assisting survivors, empowering activists, and supporting institutions. Laura, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, Laura, you were part of this White House Task Force to Protect Students from Sexual Assault that released new recommendations this week for combating campus rape. Can you give us an overview of what the recommendations call for?
Absolutely. Well, they call for several things, and the one I'm most excited about was a climate survey. Right now, we have a federal law known as the Clery Act that requires every campus to report crimes that they become aware of. And that number for sexual assault is very small because we know it's an underreported problem. So what the climate survey will do is actually anonymously survey all the students on a campus, figure out the actual rate of victimization, and then contrast that with the reported number. And there'll be a giant gap, and colleges will finally realize there is a problem on our campus, and now we're going to work to make everyone feel comfortable coming forward. We're going to try to get that victimization number down. So I believe it'll help colleges have the incentive to truly address this issue.
And as part of this also, to raise awareness in the colleges, but also to bring that to the public at large so that people have an idea of themselves of what the problem is, the scope of it.
Absolutely. I mean, sexual violence has been so long a silent problem, and the reason so many are speaking out is we're done with this issue. We identify ourselves as survivors, as activists. We are going to the White House. We know there's no shame in what happened to us, and we want everyone out there to know there's no shame either, and we can change this problem when we speak up and stand up for what's right.
Why do you think so many sexual assaults on campuses have gone underreported? Why is there this discrepancy between actual sexual assaults and what's been reported?
There's at least two main issues working there. One is we have this notion in our society that rape or sexual assault is only when a stranger attacks you on the street and violently beats you into submission. But what really happens in the majority of cases, they're acquaintance rape or you're on a date. It's someone you know, someone you thought you could trust. And often on campuses, there's alcohol involved. And, you know, women who go through this and men who do too know that they're victimized. They know something's wrong, but they don't know that they can call it sexual assault. They don't know that they can go get help. And in addition to just not being able to identify what's happened to them, there's also self-blame. And our society has so long blamed victims for what happened to them. Where were you going? Why were you drinking? And we really have never put the burden on perpetrators. Why didn't you listen to their no? Why did you go after someone who's intoxicated? And we need to start shifting that dialogue because then reporting will happen.
So you're talking about issues of self-blame for the victims and also reframing what a rape actually is. But what about the colleges themselves? What roles do they have in some of the problems that are coming out about mishandling of rape cases and sexual assault in general?
Absolutely. So, I mean, colleges aren't very transparent in their process. When I was at Wisconsin, I know that I had no idea that I could report to anyone. And the only reason I ever found out is a professor of mine stopped class and started talking about campus sexual assault and told every one of her students about this process. So part of the underreporting on campuses is that there's just no information. And even when a survivor does access the process, colleges have a fear that if they really go after sexual assault as an issue, if this becomes public, that they'll lose admissions or it'll hurt their reputation. And so they just sweep it under the rug or have tried for years. And that's why you see this flurry of Title IX complaints. Over 55 schools are under investigation. We've had several other resolutions prior to that. We really are calling out colleges because they have to treat us right. They have to address sexual violence, and they don't get to get away with this anymore.
I know it's been a long time since you were a student at UW-Madison, and you went through a lot in how you processed that rape and became the activist that you are today. But your story is illustrative of what you're talking about here. Would you be willing to share it with us?
Yeah, so when I was a freshman at the University of Wisconsin, I was on the rowing team there, and two men from my team, I had trusted them to walk me to another party. I was extremely intoxicated. It was only my second time drinking, and I noticed that they took me the wrong way, and I asked them, why aren't we heading the direction of the party? They said, oh, we're just going to stop by an apartment quick, and I realized kind of as we got close to the apartment that they had other intentions, and they took me inside and they assaulted me. And like many survivors, I stayed silent. I didn't really know how to talk about what happened. I blamed myself. And over time, I was educated. PAVE, Promoting Awareness, Victim Empowerment, was on my campus. It still is today at Wisconsin. And they talked about acquaintance rape. They talked about alcohol-facilitated sexual assault. They told me it wasn't my fault. And I believed them. And that led me on this path that I'm on today of seeking justice, not just in my case, but for every survivor across this country.
And what do you want survivors, maybe people who haven't reported at universities, what do you want them to know and learn from your story and to do going forward?
I think the most simple thing to know is it's not your fault. You have no reason to have any shame. And there's so much power in your voice when you speak out. I mean, the White House has heard survivors. They're letting us sit at the table and they're listening to our ideas and then they're making them law. They're making them part of their task force announcements. So now is the time to speak up if you never have. Let others know that this is a problem and that we are going to work together to change it. So their courage will help others speak out too.
The Department of Education regulates schools under the Clery Act that you mentioned, and it's only fined, though, offending schools maybe six times in the past, and most of those fines have been relatively small. How optimistic are you that these new measures will go further in addressing the problem?
I am very excited, actually. The Campus Save Act that you mentioned went into law just this last March, and I was working on the rulemaking committee. So there's regulations coming out this fall when students are back at school, and there will be more rights for victims going through the process, being able to have an advisor of their choice, being able to have equal due process in the hearings, being able to know about the results or appeal. And I think now that we have these rights in place, and each single one of those rights is backed up with a maximum $35,000 fine, I think we are going to see more fines coming out against schools. I think the Clery compliance division at the Department of Education is ready for that, and they're preparing to really add a cost to schools who aren't going to respect the rights of survivors.
And now we've got this 55 colleges under investigation list, including UW-Whitewater. Do you see this as significant?
Absolutely. I think the biggest thing that came out of the task force in many ways was transparency. This has been happening for a long time. And back in 2010, the Center for Public Integrity did an investigative series, and they surveyed 33 different cases and found that the majority of assaults were being mishandled, and the few that there were consequences for, there were meaningless consequences. And that was back, you know, just 4 years ago. And now we're seeing not just a handful of cases, but tons of cases. Each one of those 55 complaints has more than one victim, more than one activist standing up and calling for change. So it's really exciting that we now as a nation can see what's happening. It's not behind closed doors. It's not private complaints no one knows about. We're rejecting the shame associated with sexual violence and calling for change.
Laura, thank you so much for coming on today, and thank you for sharing your story, too.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
We've been talking to Laura Dunn, former student of the UW-Madison, where she survived sexual assault, but she's the founder these days and executive director of Serve Justice, a nonprofit that assists survivors, empowers activists, and supports institutions to decrease sexual violence.